This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Michigan League for Public Policy CEO Gilda Jacobs joins us to discuss Michigan's pilot program to drug test some of the state's welfare recipients. But first, we're going to catch up with what's happening in Kalamazoo and Portage and the issues affecting those cities and other local governments. We are joined by Portage Mayor Peter Strastis and Kalamazoo Vice Mayor Don Cooney. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
And we also have WMUK reporter Sevilla Mann. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon.
And you have the first question.
Let's talk about state policy and how it affects the fiscal health of cities. This is something the Michigan Municipal League, which advocates for cities and townships, has been hitting really hard recently. The MML says well-run, prudent cities are at risk if the state doesn't change its policies on tax revenue and on revenue sharing. What impact is revenue sharing or the lack of it having on your cities?
Well, if we were getting the same amount of money from the state as we did 10 years ago, we wouldn't have a deficit. But the state has continued to cut back on revenue sharing to the cities, and it's having a dramatic effect, not only on our city, but on cities throughout the state. And I think it's a big mistake because there are so many cities that are hurting right now. I mean, just as an example, I think we've done everything that we can in the city to manage our financial affairs. When I first got on the city commission a long time ago, 19 years ago, we had 916 full-time workers. Now we have 632. Since Chief Hadley has been in office as our chief of public safety, we have 40 less policemen. And we have tried not to lay people off. We just haven't been able to fill the slots when they were there. So I think it's dramatic difference, and we really need the money.
Now, Peter Strastis, Portage passed a budget recently where you kept the millage the same. You were actually able to add some staff. So, you know, Sevilla mentioned that cities which are in good financial shape still face maybe some long-term problems. Do you see any warning signs down the road that say that Portage is going to face some problems, even if things look pretty good right now?
Certainly, state revenue sharing is down. There's no denying that. It has impacted all cities. And if, in fact, that's the reality of the world we live in, then our role in Portage is to control that environment that we are involved in. And so we did do staffing reductions, like most cities, in the recession. And we came out of this recession reasonably well. And, of course, locally, we do have local tax base. That's most of our income. And we're blessed in Portage to have a city that we can actually grow the tax base. And so we have grown our way out of this recession is Portage's success story, as well as the managing this lack of income from the state of Michigan. If there's something good, they did keep us whole for the personal property tax. And so we had the recession, which was a huge challenge for all of us. We had this dark cloud of the personal property tax going away, and would we ever see that income, the income they said they would deliver? They did deliver that income, so we're pleased on that. And net-net in Portage, that we're always concerned about the future, we're trying to plan for the future, is that out of this recession, we are growing our tax base. We're the largest tax base in Kalamazoo County, overall property value of $4.2 billion, or taxable just over $2 billion, which not only supports the city of Portage, but definitely supports the county government. We are the largest contributor to county government. So the whole situation of this income thing is getting better for us in Portage just because of the opportunity to improve the tax base. And to the point of being conservative, as we've always been in Portage, that we ended up with a $3 million surplus last year. And the fact of the matter of that is we put $1 million towards roads. So we're doubled up on our roads construction this summer. Sorry, everyone in Portage, you'll be dodging cones. But when it's all done, the roads will be that much better. We've hired more police and fire with the income we had. But the big story is debt in Portage, in that we were at $105 million in debt 7 years ago. That was a peak. And we've lowered it down to $70 million. And so 7 years, we eliminate a third of our debt. And I don't know what's going to happen mathematically in the next 14 years, but at this rate, we could be one of the first cities with zero debt. And of course, as we lower the debt in the last 7 years, just like you at home, if you lower that debt, you have more money to spend on other kinds of things. So because we lower the debt, that's how we hired more police and fire men of recent years.
Sevilla?
Kalamazoo closed a hole in its budget last year without major cuts, about 6 months out now from budget time, 7 months. What's it going to take to balance Kalamazoo's budget this year?
We don't have the final figures in now, but we've made some adjustments. And with the additional help from the state, I think we're going to be okay next year. I don't think we're going to have to make any cuts. But that's how we've been doing it, year to year, just scrapping by and fighting our way through. And in talking to the city manager last week, he indicated that he thought we were going to be in okay shape for the coming year. But we have to say that structurally, unless there are some major adjustments made, we're going to be in deep trouble down the line. So it looks like we're going to escape next year, but we have to still deal with that structural deficit, which is ahead of us.
Okay, so if it were just up to Don Cooney how to deal with this structural deficit and make major adjustments, what would happen?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a couple things that need to be done. First of all, I think that the state has to come through with more help. But
you've already said you're not counting on that.
I know, we're not counting on that. We're not counting on that. That would be Christmas. But I think we have to take seriously the idea of an income tax. I mean, if the statistics are right that 81% of the people that work in the city don't live in the city and aren't paying anything towards the city, there's a problem there. And that would enable us to lower property taxes in the city, and which would, I think, have a positive influence when people moving into the city. So I think we seriously have to look at that. But I think we got a couple other tricks up our sleeve that I think you'll be hearing about in the next couple of weeks.
But you don't want to share them just yet?
I can't.
Okay.
I'm sworn to secrecy.
Peter Strazis, the city of Portage is considering a non-discrimination ordinance. I should note, we are speaking on Tuesday morning, so by the time people hear this, you will have held a public hearing, and it's possible there will have been a vote. Just give us the basics here, though. What would the non-discrimination ordinance do if it is passed?
The non-discrimination ordinance specifically looks at LGBT population as it relates to housing and jobs. Right now, there are no laws related to discriminating against a person within that population, LBG population, that has a job and could be fired or is looking for housing that can't get housing. And so the ordinance in front of the commission tonight, as well as the citizens of Portage, and the region for that matter, is that we're going to consider that non-discrimination ordinance so that people cannot discriminate against that population for jobs or housing. And that's the gist of it.
If there is a vote, how would you come down on it?
If there's a vote, I'm in favor of this. And I don't know what the rest of the council is, how they're going to vote. But I think the majority of the council feels that it's a time right now in society, in our city, that we need to not discriminate against any particular population. And I know it's going to be a long meeting tonight, hopefully done before midnight, with perhaps several hundred people showing up to the council chambers this evening. And I'm just hopeful people are respectful. We have a good debate as a council. The community has a debate. And I think it's healthy for a community to have debates. It's healthy for a council to have a debate. And we'll see which way this goes tonight, whether we table this or we vote tonight. It's up to the council. But I believe that our community needs to come together on this issue. This is an opportunity for us to be consistent with other communities around us. And it's important as a community to debate and resolve difficult, challenging social agendas.
Yeah, I congratulate Pete, because there's going to be a lot of people stand against him on that. But I think he's brave to take that stand. And I totally agree that it's the right stand. I mean, our experience in Kalamazoo, I think we went a little further than you. We also said public accommodations, not only housing and employment, but public accommodations. And what we found in the city, we had a series of hearings, and I found that as the hearings went on, people were much more respectful of each other. When they saw people stand up there who were gay or lesbian and people looked at them and said, these are decent people from our community. And all we're asking is that everybody be treated decently in our community. And I think in the end, people had their say and they respected each other much more. And I hope that's what will happen tonight.
Okay. And again, we are speaking Tuesday. By the time people hear this, again, the hearing will have been held and maybe something gets decided one way or another. Sevilla?
This is for Dawn. Parking in downtown Kalamazoo. Let's talk about that. Parking rates are going up downtown. Yeah. I think meters are going up to $1.75 an hour this summer, regular meters, not the long-term ones. Next year, you're going to have enforcement on Saturdays, enforcement till 8 p.m. What kind of effect does that have for people who work downtown, you know, who maybe are working there but not earning so much money and have to pay those meters longer and more?
You know, it's going to have a negative effect. There's no question about it. And I wish that we could make all parking free. But the reality is there's a couple things going on. One is that we have parking structures that have to be maintained, and they cost a lot of money to maintain it. The second thing is people from the Downtown Development Authority say, and I think they're right, that if you don't have some regulations, then people will just, employees or people from down, will just park there and then nobody else can get in there. So we have to have some reasonable way to deal with that. And I think that what they're talking about is not out of line with other cities. If you go to Ann Arbor or Grand Rapids or Lansing, it's pretty much the same. But we're also talking about some interesting things because, you know, like, we don't want people who are low income to not be able to go to events downtown, like in Bronson Park, if they're having a reading with kids or they're having a celebration. So what they promised us that they would seriously consider would be a shuttle bus where people could park outside of downtown and take a shuttle downtown for free. Now, that's not complete yet, but I'm really hoping that that happens because we don't want to make it a hardship for people who are low income. We shouldn't be excluding them from whatever they can take advantage of downtown. So I'm hoping that will happen and that will soften the blow somewhat. But it's definitely, I don't see how it's not going to have a negative effect.
Peter Stratzis, the city of Portage has also approved a moratorium on new medical marijuana businesses. One thing that I guess I'm wondering about here is we just had someone on a couple weeks back talking about how this is an issue the state keeps talking about having to deal with because there's a law which was a citizen-initiated referendum that seems to have some holes in it, and there's a lot of local governments which are saying we could use some help. Do you need some guidance from the state to really go ahead and make some serious changes here, or can you do it just at the Portage City Council level?
Well, the Portage City Council can certainly create ordinances that are not in conflict with federal state laws, but I think most municipalities are hopeful that federal state government could deal with the issue and come up with a solution that it will be workable for the entire state or the entire country. So while we're waiting for that to happen, it's the will of the people or the will of the elected officials to create reasonable regulations that are legal and to accommodate the community. And so personally, I think the state needs to step up and make a decision and eliminate a lot of the local arguments and discussions that are happening and to neutralize that and be done with it at the state level.
Yeah, I've had several conversations with our attorney on this thing, and there are cities that are doing it, that are setting up these forms. But he's telling us that that's illegal and that any time they could be shut down. So really, we need some guidance from the state. We need some action from the state to give us the legitimacy to do what needs to be done here.
Sevilla?
Summer can be a noisy time of year in Kalamazoo. Portage as well, perhaps, and I'm not talking about birds chirping. It's a favorite
season. Fireworks coming up.
Exactly. Yeah, fireworks is what I was thinking of. The City Commission in Kalamazoo has been spending some time on the fireworks issue recently. Now, of course, this gets complicated because state laws come into play, so how much you can restrict fireworks locally is a question there. However, I've been hearing commissioners say there are plans to look at the city's entire noise ordinance coming up. So what's happening with noise in Kalamazoo?
Well, you know, we're following the state and for the fireworks. Now, we did have an issue with the baseball team, right, the Growlers. And I think they made some very reasonable accommodations. They don't use the fireworks that are very loud that are outside the stadium. They do them inside the stadium.
You had the Growlers wanted to put on, what was it, something like 6 fireworks displays
right.
through the summer.
So now we're letting them put on 6 because they've made some adjustments that were important. And, you know, if you look around that, you got to make a decision if you want to have a baseball team in your city. Because, I mean, I went to the game on Friday night, and they had about 80% to 90% fall there. But, you know, it's not just about baseball. It's about the entertainment that goes on. And every other team, minor league team, that has a place, a baseball team, is using these fireworks. So somehow we got to balance out people's legitimate concerns about the noise and their pets getting all upset, and at the same time try to make it reasonable for the people that enjoy those kind of things, whose kids enjoy those kinds of things. And if we want to have a baseball team, we're going to have something like that.
I think there were people who commented at meetings saying, you know, it's not the planned fireworks displays that get to me. You know, I know those are coming up. It's you know, people individually deciding when and where they want to set off their explosive devices. And, you know, it might be 11:45 p.m. Next door. And so how much can the city do to restrict those kinds of sounds?
You know, we have laws. We have ordinances that forbid them. And people will call and the police will come. And by the time they get there, those guys are gone and their friends. So they do what they can. But, you know, that's taking them away from other very important kinds of things, especially when we don't have as many people on the street as we used to have. So we have to hit a reasonable balance. We have to go after people that are abusing the rules. And I know a lady spoke to me the other day, told me that her dog gets all upset and terrible when this happens. And that's right. She shouldn't have to go through that. So people got to be more considerate of each other. But we can't put a policeman on every corner to make sure that people aren't setting off fireworks.
Yeah, we have the issue in Portage, obviously, around the 4th of July time, as well as many communities. The states try to address that, and we address it with our police force. But at the end of the day, it's about communication, neighbor to neighbor, human being to human being.
Yeah.
And so I think it's terribly important that the news media gets the message out really about, you know what, respect your neighbor, respect people. And that's the bottom line. And you can't police that. That's common sense. That's neighborly. And so I'm reaching out to everyone in Portage in the community. Respect each other. Understand there are people that have animals and pets that are disturbed by this. Nobody wants to be woken up after midnight. We have rules against it. You're breaking the law. Be respectful. Be a good community. And I hope neighbors can work through it with good communication.
Don Cooney, Kalamazoo has approved what's called a fair chance policy. It says that businesses that are doing work with the city of Kalamazoo have to prove they don't discriminate against ex-offenders on job applications. Explain now what this does for someone who might have gone astray of the law at some point and maybe spent some time in jail.
You know, we have hundreds of people coming back to our community each year from incarceration. These are people who have paid their dues. They're coming back to the community. But so many of them have had great difficulties in getting employment. And if they can't get employment, they're in real trouble. So what we want to do and what the National Labor Relations Board has advocated was to open the doors as far as possible for people that are returning from incarceration. So what this new rule says is that you should not deny a person an opportunity for employment unless there is a serious reason for that. And that means this. That if a person applies for a job, you would not check their criminal record until the point where you identified this person as qualified for the job and have conditionally offered that person the job. And then, even then, you wouldn't automatically deny that person the job. If the person had committed a crime when they were 14 years old, and now they're 37 and they haven't done anything else wrong, there's no reason to deny that person a job. So only if there was a direct connection between the employment that the person was going to have and the conviction that they had would there be any problem. And even then, a person could move out of that. I meet each week with a group of ex-offenders out of a church here in Edison neighborhood called Seasons of Change. And I meet with five men who were ex-offenders who are doing fine now. But they're a support group for young people coming out. And they're doing a terrific job. But these guys face great challenges. They face challenges in terms of housing. They face challenges in terms of getting a job. They face challenges of their families, getting back with their families. And every one of these guys that come out has post-traumatic stress disorder. And we need to step up and give a lot more help to these people. And I think the Fair Chance is one positive step in that direction. And there are employers who are really stepping up outside of that to make available more opportunities for people who are incarcerated.
Portage Mayor Peter Strazis and Kalamazoo Vice Mayor Don Cooney, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
And also thanks to WMUK local government and education reporter Sevilla Mann.
Thank you.
A longer version of the interview with Don Cooney and Peter Strazis can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In 2014, Governor Rick Snyder signed legislation creating a pilot program to test welfare applicants or recipients if they were suspected of using drugs. Allegan County was one of three counties selected for the pilot program, which ends September 30th. The Guardian recently reported that so far, no one has tested positive under the program. Gilda Jacobs is the CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
When lawmakers were debating this bill, you testified against it and told them it was not a good idea. But even with that, are you surprised to hear that out of 303 people tested, there were no positive results returned?
Honestly, this does not surprise me at all. You know, we suggested that was going to be what the results were. Michigan already had a drug testing program years ago where there was very little positive outcome in terms of what the legislature was looking for. You know, people that are on cash assistance are honestly not more likely to abuse substances than the general population. And this was a solution looking for a problem, quite honestly.
Even if there were some positive results which came back, would it still be a bad idea from an overall public policy perspective?
I think the bad public policy part of this is that legislation often gets crafted or policies get crafted because people have certain biases and stereotypes against people who are low income. And I think this is sort of another example where people who are kind of struggling every day to make ends meet are seen as people that have substance abuse problems, and that's just not the case. So I think we should be spending our time and energy creating public policy that actually does more good than is out looking to punish people who shouldn't be punished.
Is this result in Michigan similar to what has been found in other states?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, if Michigan had really looked at other states that had done this before and had already seen that there was very little positive anything coming out of that, and that states were spending a lot of money for very few results, we could have saved ourselves a lot of time and aggravation and just not even have done this.
Does the state have an interest at all in trying to find people who, on public assistance, even if there aren't very many of them, may have some sort of a problem, and which was the stated intent of this program when Governor Snyder signed it into law, help them find a treatment program?
Listen, I think substance abuse continues to be a problem for Michigan as well as other states, but it's not just for people who are poor that have this problem. So I think we need to be sure that there are treatment programs that are available. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people that have substance abuse problems end up in the criminal system. that's something that, you know, we throw a lot of money into. If there is any kind of way to have diversion, to have diversion courts for people that have substance abuse, that makes a lot of sense. There's other ways of kind of handling this. You know, people who have substance abuse are people that are really dealing with a physical problem. And right now in Michigan, we have an opioid epidemic. It crosses all races, all socioeconomic levels. You know, drugs are a problem for the state in general, not just because you're poor. And I think we need a much more, a much more holistic approach, a broader approach to taking a look at substance abuse in general. If you want to take a look at problems that low-income people have, one of the problems they have is toxic stress, which creates huge mental health issues. Those are the kinds of things that I would love the state to be able to be dealing with, because, you know, if you help people that are and go to the root causes of their toxic stress, we're going to be able to help people and their kids in the long run.
To play devil's advocate here with the idea of drug testing and getting results back with either no positive results, as Michigan got, or very few, could you argue that if a program is in existence and people know they're going to be tested, they may be less likely to use drugs?
That may be true. I don't know. I think you can make the argument. I know the legislature's thinking was that if you're going to be taking public dollars, then you know, we want everybody to be accountable if you're using taxpayer dollars. You can really take that context and extend it. Legislators, their paychecks are paid by taxpayers. Anybody who gets a business tax break, from the government, as a taxpayer, I'm paying for those tax breaks. So, the real issue is, why are you vilifying, poor people as opposed to anybody who gets state money? It could even be a scholarship from the state. What we've done is just sort of picked a group of people to kind of pick on, as opposed to saying, well, if that's really the philosophy that you're ascribing to, every legislator, every college student that gets state aid, every government employee should all be drug tested. I'm not sure we really want to go in that direction. If substance abuse is a problem for our society, let's kind of figure out why. What are those root causes? What can we do? Do we have enough treatment centers? Do we know enough about the issue that we can prevent substance abuse? That's where we ought to be putting our dollars and our time.
So is there any cost savings to be found? If you're strictly looking at the bottom line, can a state say that if we put this into effect at some point, we would be able to show that this has had a positive impact on our budget?
Well, if you use the pilot program as a jumping off point, we see that money was put into the pilot program and there was no payoff. So I think that's what we have to say is, we tried this. It doesn't work. Let's get rid of this policy. That's why you have pilot programs to test it out. And here's a situation where the results didn't prove what the hypothesis was that the legislature had. So we can say, okay, we've been there, done that. We can get rid of this policy now.
In addition to being the CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, you're also a former state lawmaker. So you have some idea of how this works, even if the people you served with are no longer in the legislature.
Again, we have to make sure that the people in the legislature look at the data before they make decisions. And unfortunately, philosophical ideologies are often driving these kinds of laws, okay, or these kinds of policies. We need to ask the legislature, let's step back, let's really look at, some data-driven research, and be sure that when we commit public dollars to something, that it's based on the data, not because we have a certain philosophical bent one way or another.
Will you be watching the legislature closely come the end of September, early October, to see what happens with this?
We always watch the legislature closely to see what happens. Yes, indeed, we will be.
Gilda Jacobs, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Gilda Jacobs is the CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.